What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. Now, our second host, Casey Clapp, moments ago said, "Alex, I've got to pee. Start without me." So here I am. Casey's in the bathroom. I'm having a Garth from Wayne's World moment, but I decided to start the show, and I really don't know what else to say. Oh, the door is open. Casey, thank God. Casey has returned.
What's been happening in my absence?
I panicked, my man.
I couldn't hear anything. Just forget what to say, not have anything to say.
Yeah, I don't know. Usually we have a talk, we have a back and forth rapport, and when there was no forth, I was like, I'm going back.
Hey, anyway, it's good to. I don't know what to do.
If I were better at my job, I probably could have done something.
We just got to get you in the radio host style, not the co-host, but just the radio host where you just talk. The microphone is your audience,
right? Yeah.
Hey guys, it's Alex Croson here, listening to a nice bit of jazz this morning. The last thing we heard was from Casey flushing that toilet.
I should have played some jazz. That would have been a good intro.
Yeah, that would have been great. And just kind of like just go into your old, college DJ life.
Oh, yeah. My forgotten life as a college DJ.
Yeah. Everyone's forgotten life.
Casey, how are you?
Doing just great. Have some family in town, getting ready to go up to the mountain for a wedding. It's going to be nice.
Oh, wow. Congrats to the betrothed.
I will let them know you said so.
Thanks.
Should be very
and they'll
good.
Say, "Who is that?"
I'm like, "Oh, okay. Thank you. I don't think people, if they are getting married, I think oftentimes they're just like, "Oh, thank you." They don't care what it is. They just are now conditioned to say thank you because everyone's going to say congratulations.
Yeah.
And then later they're like, "Yeah. The devil says, good job. Okay, thank you. Tell him thank you."
Satan himself.
Yeah. Wait. Who?
Who's this letter from? Beelzebub.
Wow.
Casey.
Beelzebub. Get out of here.
No. At some point, hey, how about this? At the end of the show, what might be a good idea is for me to go to the bathroom and you to do the outro.
That would be perfect. Just put a nice bow on it.
Yeah. Case, we are talking about a tree today.
All right, let's do it.
As we do every week.
I am horribly unprepared, but I got it. I'll spitball this one.
Wow, I don't believe that for a second.
I was hoping to be like in Anchorman when he's like, "Oh no, I couldn't. I'm not prepared." And then he slides his flute out of his thing. And he was ready to go.
It's like a flute sheath somewhere.
Exactly. I got my. It's in my long sleeves that I'm wearing.
Yeah, your long johns. Yeah. Hey, can I say? You said you joke that you're not prepared.
Uh-huh.
I am not joking when I say I'm not prepared. And the reason being, I was going to get some stuff done this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I didn't have time, sure. But I slept so fucking hard last night.
Yeah.
I felt like a corpse. Like I woke up and I was like, I feel like I weigh 1,000 pounds. I wasn't even sure I could move when I woke up. But I slept so hard.
Now, did it feel good?
Yeah.
Like, are you like, I feel rejuvenated?
Yes, because if you listen to last episode, you will know that I now have a standing desk.
Uh-huh.
And I've been standing at it all day for 2 days straight. My body is so tired. So I really needed the rest. And I woke up and I felt a lot better.
Excellent.
However, my brain is much like London. It's quite foggy, my boy.
Foggy Alex Brainton.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Well, this is going to be an episode for you then. I'll do all the talking.
What does that mean?
You can just sit there and be like, almost asleep.
Yeah, I don't want to give you that green light
of
you do all the talking. Casey, let's get into this week's tree. Let's are covering the umbrella pine.
Correct.
Now, I said it in that fashion instead of umbrella pine. I said umbrella pine.
Okay.
Because this is a hyphenated pine.
Yes.
Umbrella hyphen pine, which means that it's not a real pine.
Yes. Nor is it a real umbrella, Alex.
Oh, Casey.
It is.
Could you stand underneath it if it were raining? Would it protect you at all?
Actually, yeah, it would. It would. Yeah, I think so. I think technically, I don't know if it's the best. Port Orford cedar, bar none. Go underneath one of those. You will stay dry.
Wow.
In a squall.
Okay.
This one, I think you're probably going to start getting some drips coming down.
This should have been a category in our, maybe next year, in our Tournament of Champion Trees.
Which one? Hair wetness?
Yeah. Yeah. It's capaciousness as it relates to hair wetness.
Yeah. We got to come up with some intense term about that.
Yeah. We'll do it next year.
But capaciousness, I think, sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. We'll figure that out. I'll come up with an equation to make sure that it is.
I know you will.
Very scientific.
Casey, let's imagine that you and I are... Well, here's the deal, Case. I'm so unprepared. I don't even know where this thing grows.
Give me a place
we could be walking around and find one of these things.
I will just say almost literally anywhere in the mountains of Japan.
Okay, you and I are trekking through the mountains of Japan.
Yep.
I don't know how we've gotten here. You must have drugged me.
Yeah, yeah. I Shanghai'd you on a plane.
Oh God!
You woke up stuck in a completely different place, unable to know where you are or escape.
That's just terrible.
Yeah.
And we come across some umbrella pine.
That's right.
Let's ID this tree.
So first thing you're gonna notice is it looks like it has not the whole shape of an umbrella. You recall we did a species called the umbrella thorn.
Yes.
That, the whole tree looked like an umbrella.
That was very reminiscent of an umbrella.
Yeah. Now, this is not the whole tree reminiscing of umbrellas. It is a tree that has leaves. I'm not going to say leaves in quotes right here, and I won't tell you why. The leaves have a parasol shape to them. So as they come out from the twig, there's a nice twig. And then at the end, there's just this perfect spiral of leaves that comes out. But it's a very tight spiral, so you can't see that it's a spiral. It just looks like a circle or a whirl of leaves coming out.
It looks very much like a marijuana leaf.
What? Are we looking at the right plant?
Give me the scientific name.
Okay.
Case.
See, this is a big, great example of why we should always use scientific names.
That's right. Thank you, Linnaeus.
My heart. It is Cyadopides verticillata. And I'll tell you. Yeah, you want to sound?
Yeah,
that
I'm gonna need how to spell that.
This is S C I A D O P I T Y S.
I got it, Casey.
Verticillata.
Google filled it in.
Verticillata. I learned that. I spelled it wrong multiple times. It's verticillata.
Okay, this is not the tree I thought it was.
Oh, thank God.
This is not the tree I'm looking for.
Okay, have you found the correct droids?
Yes,
okay.
I have found the correct tree, and it does look like a pine tree.
Yes. So here's the broad spectrum. Starting from afar, you're going to see a what looks like a pine tree. You'll say, that looks like a pine tree.
Yeah.
As you walk closer, you'll notice that the bark is very shaggy and kind of a brown, fibrous, reddish color.
Hmm.
So it looks a lot more like things in the cypress family.
Oh yeah, it's very what red cedar,
yes,
type bark.
Totally. Red cedar, the giant sequoia, the cryptomeria, a lot of those things in that cypress side of the world have this long, shaggy red bark. Like the western red cedar is the perfect example.
Yeah.
So you see that and you're like, wow, that's kind of weird for a pine tree. Pine trees usually don't have, in fact, I don't think I can think of a single example of a fibrous, shaggy barked pine tree. They're usually way harder and they're kind of puzzle piecey, or if they're not, you know, furrowed.
Yeah.
So this little guy can get up to about 100 feet. Generally, it's not going to be a gigantic tree. I think the biggest one is 27 meters tall, so that's like maybe 125 feet.
That's the biggest?
That's the biggest. That's the tallest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like maybe the big thing is the diameter is like upwards of 18 feet. So
wow.
Huge, but not tall. You know?
Jeez.
So that's pretty cool. You know, you're like, okay, this is pretty interesting thing. 18 feet. Sorry, I misspoke. 12. 4.1 meters. 4.1 times 3 is, in fact, closer to, instead of 20, more like 12.
That's still impressive.
Yeah, 12 to 15 feet. Pretty good size tree.
Still a thick-ass tree.
It's real thick. It's got really nice fibrous wood. It's a thick with two C's tree. Yeah. Is that an Allen thick tree? Yeah.
Who are you, from the 90s?
So as you walk closer, Alex, you'll notice that the leaves start to look really different.
Yeah.
It's an evergreen tree. It is a conifer, and it has these dense, heavy, dark, very lustrous green needles on it. And the thing about them, some of them will, they have like different cultivars where they're kind of a little yellower, a little lime green. But generally speaking, they're going to be a really dark, lustrous green color. You'll get up, you'll look at these little twigs, and you'll notice that they are all very tufted at the end. Sometimes you have a twig that comes up, and there's like a layer or two of foliage coming out.
Hmm.
But for the most part, you actually will see that it comes up, and there is just one twig with one group of needles at the very end.
Okay.
And that's about it. It kind of does it depending on the health of the tree. If it's a cultivar, there's a couple different varieties that kind of do different things.
Like they don't so much grow along the twig, they grow at the end of the twig?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But sometimes they would grow, and because they're evergreen, they'll stay for a couple years. So you'd have some that grow here. Then the bud in the middle grows out, so you have that one kind of skirt with two other twigs coming up, or maybe a series of twigs that grew up just a little bit, so you get like really a parasol on a parasol on a parasol with two parasols coming out on the left and right.
Oh, wow. Great imagery, Casey.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Here, let me show you the photo. Can you imagine that? Just like, that has to be like some art installation.
Okay,
you
know what? I gave you shit, but I gotta be honest, that does look like a parasol on top of a parasol on top of a parasol.
With two parasols on the left and the right.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
You know what?
It looks like a water feature. Like it would be at a water park,
oh, yeah.
And out of each of those parasols, water would spray, and children would laugh and play among the umbrella pine.
Yeah, exactly. The umbrella pine squirting water out in every direction.
Yeah.
That would be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like even when the water's off, you would be like, wow, that's really nice. Like art piece made of pipes.
Yeah. That's like a modernist courtyard thing.
I love this idea. I want to see if I can
who do
somehow
we contact?
Do this. Yeah, yeah. Where's the next like water park designer?
Oh wow.
We could say, make me a forest of water trees.
Mm. Casey threw his head back in elation.
That would be so much fun. I would love that.
Casey, can we talk about the cone?
Yes.
Because I didn't know this was a conifer. Okay. You said it was not a true pine.
Correct.
And so I thought that it maybe wasn't a true conifer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also the pictures that I mistakenly saw had big like palm like leaves on it. I don't know what I was looking at.
I don't know either.
This cone. I'm gonna describe this cone.
Yeah, give us a description here.
This cone in its young form is peltate. Right?
I'm going to say yes.
It has shield-like.
It looks like it does. Yes.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. Yes.
It looks like a sequoia cone.
I was just going to say that. It looks just like a sequoia cone.
Yes.
Yeah.
However, as it ages, it opens up and starts to look a bit like a pine cone.
Yeah. It looks to me mostly like a fatter, wider Douglas fir cone a lot of the time. Or maybe a hemlock cone.
But then I'm seeing some mature ones here that I think maybe have already dropped their seeds and are kind of drying in the sun.
Uh-huh.
To me, they look like larch cones.
Yeah, totally.
This is a cone for all seasons.
It's everything you want in a cone.
Wow. Why have we not done this for Cone of the Month? We're going to do it this year for sure.
Absolutely. Put it on the docket. If you're an artist out there and you really want to draw this cone, submit your artist drawings to completelyarbitrary.com/arbitrarypod. CO Alex Croson, Cone of the Month Club, .edu.
See, I can never let you go on like marketing campaigns by yourself.
I just don't know what I'm saying.
404s everywhere.
It was like I looked up exactly what he said, and it was the arbitrary's fans only.
Casey.
Did I get it right this time?
No, you can't.
Oh my God.
Did you do that for real?
I tried, Alex.
Oh
I
my God.
Trying.
I thought you were playing into the trope that you think it's called fans only,
no.
But no, you really thought you nailed it this
time. I was
time.
Making a completely different joke, so I didn't
want
to like I didn't want my first joke to get overshadowed by my second joke. So I took the second joke and made it a serious point.
It's worlds within worlds. I can barely keep up.
I'm ashamed.
Anyway, this cone. Who am I, Casey Clapp? Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
This cone.
Regardless.
Is gorgeous.
It's
and really
cone.
Cool and so diverse. It has a lot of different stages.
Yeah.
It looks like different things at different stages.
100% right. Now, I should note that it is a cone that has a central axis.
Uh-huh.
So the cones lay down and have like this really thickened kind of bottom piece. And then they just have the appearance of a peltate scale, but they are in fact all spirally arranged along this central axis.
Very cool.
It's very cool. So they just look like one. They are, in fact, not that. But here's the thing. They are not even in the pine family. This has been a tree that has freaked people out for so long. Mm. Botanists have been like, that is a yew. No, that's in the pine family. No, I think that might actually be in a different family. And then they're like, no. This is beyond it all these things.
Wow.
It gets its own family. So it is the monotypic species in the genus Cydopodes.
Really?
Which is the monotypic genus in the family Sciadopitaceae. And some
nice
people,
job, Case.
Thank you. I'm really trying to get this right. Some people even put it all the way up to the level of order.
Really?
So there is, I think that would be Cyadopitales. No, Cyadopitales. Yeah. Or maybe Cyadopitales.
Or maybe Cyadopitales.
Yeah, it's one of the two. I don't
know. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. So it is a weird group, it is a group in and of itself, but it's a weird plant that taxonomically really gets people to be like, what is it?
I thought this thing was derivative of cedars and sequoias.
Yeah, most people
and pines, but this thing's a trendsetter.
It is, and it's been doing it and its ilk for 230 million years.
This was my next question.
Yeah.
Is this an ancient tree? Because it sure seems like it is.
It is.
What about it? Why did I assume that?
Honestly, well, here's my thought.
Okay.
I think when you see a tree and you look at it and things just seem a little weird,
yeah,
they make you think like that doesn't just happen. And if it is a little weird, it probably happened a long time ago when things like, now all the things you see, like, oh, it's kind of what pine trees look like, and it's kind of what maple trees look like. They kind of have this very generalized scheme. And when you see something that is way off from that scheme, and your brain can usually trace back that scheme. Like, okay, this makes sense, back to here, back to here, back to here, and why we are at this, like, you know, level. When you see something that's so, like, just so subtly weird and different, where you're like, that's not of this time.
Yeah.
That had to have come from some other past where the whole world was different for whatever reason.
Yeah. Because usually things make sense, you know, usually in trees, I can make sense of things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like pine trees look and behave like pine trees. Cedars
exactly
look and behave
right.
like cedars. And then something like this comes along. I don't even know where to put that.
Exactly. Because it matches like between a bunch of different things, like you were saying, the cone specifically.
Yeah.
Now, here's what makes this even more interesting, Alex.
Okay.
The leaves are actually little teeny tiny growths along the main stem.
Growths.
Yeah, I will show you this picture that I showed you again, and we'll link to it.
This is the umbrella on umbrellas.
Yeah. And this is like a botanical drawing of the tree made sometime way back when. Now, you'll notice that there are these big green parasol-looking things.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone says they look like the spines of, you know, an umbrella, like the arms that reach out and hold it up.
Yeah.
So it's not technically the parasol. It is the parasol studs.
It's like the veins.
Yes, thank you. So notice that there are these little dots along the stem.
Yeah,
those
little nodes.
Exactly. They're not lenticels. Those are actually the leaves of this tree. They are brown, they're very small, and they just lay next to the stem.
Okay.
The green thing that you see there
uh-huh.
is actually elongated stem tissue, and it's called a cladode, C-L-A-D-O-D-E.
This is huge.
It's really weird.
Cladode.
So it's essentially elongated stem tissue that has the chlorophyll inside of it.
I have a one-word question.
Okay.
Why?
Who knows? 230 million years ago, this was like, all right, guys, I got a great idea. How about we don't fuck with leaves?
Wow.
Let's just put it right in the stem and grow our stem out. And the plant was like, yeah, that's sick. Let's do it. It's going to be a hot trend forever. All of the rest of these trees died out in the Jurassic, and this is the only one left. So, you know.
Wow.
You shouldn't be the first, and you shouldn't be the last of a fashion, but this, the Cydopodes, is. It's the last of a fashion.
Now, I have a few follow-up questions. I'm sure people are wondering.
All right.
Does this tree still photosynthesize through its leaves?
No.
It photosynthesizes through these lowercase leaves, these cladodes?
Yes, correct.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I should admit, and I don't like to take a hard stance on things all the time. I'm going to take a hard stance on this because I love it. But the in conifers.org, they say, quote, photosynthetic leaves variously interpreted as a pair of true leaves fused together or as highly modified shoots, cladodes. So I think that they are cladodes. I love that. I'm always a fan of the more interesting option for something.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And if the scientists are going back and forth and like, we don't know, what is it? Is it this? Is it that? I'm just going to be like, who cares? Call it a cladode, high-five each other, and go out and have a good day. Don't worry about trying to say, oh, these, like, who wants to bore it down and say, oh, these are just two leaves that are fused together? Lame and boring. Cladodes.
So calling them cladodes is more interesting.
Yeah, it's so much more cooler.
Okay,
yeah.
So my next question is, is this an evergreen tree?
It is, yes.
Okay, so its leaves stay on its leaves, capital L.
Yeah.
Its proper leaves stay on that twig year round.
Mm-hmm. But they're brown, so really it's an ever brown tree if you look at the true capital L leaves along the stem.
This is so curious.
Isn't it wild? Let me give you another example to help everyone out there kind of conceptualize if you're just listening, which is usually what people do to our podcast. Have you ever had asparagus?
Yes.
You know when you get asparagus, it has those little triangles on the side of the stem? Mm-hmm. Like we eat the shoot. The shoot is the green thing that is photosynthetic, and the little tiny leaves are, those are the same way. So the asparagus is considered a cladode.
Oh, the little pointy flaps on the side of the asparagus are the leaves?
Those are the leaves.
And the stalk, the part that we eat, the bud at the end is the cladode?
Exactly. Well, not the bud, the whole stalk
the whole stalk, yeah, including the bud.
Exactly.
Wow.
As far as my research knows, I actually don't know what the rest of an asparagus plant looks like, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
It sounds like a good Patreon episode.
There you go. Hey, what is asparagus?
And why does it make your pee smell?
Oh, that's a question for the ages.
Casey, we have so much more to say about this umbrella pine.
Yeah, we sure do.
But it would be so silly of us to do it before break.
Oh, yeah. No, we can't do that. You got to take a second and kind of like breathe in and breathe out.
Yeah. Well, we're going to give you some time to process all the information we just gave you. We'll be right back. More Completely Arbitrary. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. We hope you had some time to process the startling revelation of whatever this tree is.
Leaves are not leaves. They are, in fact, stems. The other leaves are just brown. Who cares?
Cladodes, Casey.
Yeah, exactly.
Today we're talking, I'm going to call it the Japanese umbrella pine. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fine.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. There's an umbrella pine, Japanese umbrella pine, or as known in Japan, the Koyomaki.
Koyomaki?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is another one of those trees where there's no, this is the only kind. So the indigenous language that initially named it is the only name for it. Any other name is just us making up some westernized version.
I see.
So that's why it's umbrella pines, because it looks like an umbrella. Great. That's a good start. It looks like a pine. And then that's just a complete failure because we don't have any word for it. So, but we're English speakers, the old ones especially, are like, Koyomaki, that's not going to work. Let's call it the umbrella pine instead. So it's fine because it looks like an umbrella pine. It looks like a pine that looks like an umbrella. So it kind of makes sense. I think it's a good English name, in my opinion, because it looks like both of those things.
Yeah.
But I also enjoy like I said, we've said this before, the indigenous names of things. Koyomaki just sounds so much more interesting.
Yeah, I think I'll make that the title of this episode.
Yeah, there you go.
Also, I don't know if I've always wondered about this. You know, pepperoncinis?
Uh-huh.
I've always wondered, because I started noticing them at, like, places and they started calling them banana peppers.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm always curious, like, is banana pepper a different pepper than a pepperoncini?
I don't think so.
No?
I don't know.
Banana peppers might be a variety of pepperoncini and like a little milder. Because to me, like, a pepperoncini is kind of spicy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got a little bit of heat to it. But a banana pepper just has like a tang, like it just tastes like a pickled pepper.
Weird. I wonder, I don't have any idea what the difference would be.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like one's pickled, the other is just like raw.
Oh, potentially.
I don't know.
No, I think pepperoncinis are also pickled. Hey, you know what? I'm going to reach out to Spencer Huey. Or I could just Google, I'd like to catch up with Spencer.
Reach out, say hi, Spencer. Tell him I say hi.
All right, Casey. Well, this is the second episode in our, I would say, trilogy with a prelude.
Yes.
Or with a postlude, rather, about symbiosis.
Correct.
I'm very interested to hear how symbiosis plays a part in the existence of Kaiomaki.
I am so happy you asked, Alex. So last week, we chatted about the idea of a symbiotic relationship in a traditional kind of way. I say traditional in that symbiosis, and I was talking with my family, it's in town today, and essentially they were saying, now where is the line, or we had the discussion of where is the line between mutual parasitism and symbiosis, and basically kind of twisted on its head.
Sure.
And I said it's 6-1 way, half a dozen another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can look at it in either way. One is like both things are motivated by themselves, for themselves, and they just happen to also benefit the other person's. Like, the tree sucks nutrients from the fungus. The fungus sucks sugars from the tree. None of them are doing it because they're having a good time with each other.
Right.
They're doing it because they're like, okay, yeah, I can get this. I have a knee and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
It's better not to kill the tree than I can always get these things.
They don't talk about it beforehand and I might.
Exactly. Like, so, but then, you know, if we are humans and we're saying, oh, look, they're working together.
Right.
That's good. That is a positive, mutual, beneficial, relationship, symbiosis, it's good. It's nice.
Do you think that's an okay characterization?
I think it is. I think it's an okay characterization because it essentially says it's just another way of looking at the way the world is.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's more of a let's take all emotion out of everything, don't give a good or a bad that is like on a larger scale. Just look at it from a what does this fungus need, and it's going to go about getting that. And then over millions of years, if that fungus always got what it needs from that tree and killed that tree every single time, that fungus would die because it would kill what it is using to, to live. So it ended up benefiting the fungus more to not kill the tree and just take a little bit for a long time. And that worked out way better.
It's the vampire feeder thing.
Yes, exactly right. We talk about this all the time.
Yes, every episode at least.
Duh. So that, and then the tree would be doing the same thing with the fungus. The essentially is like, if I put my root over here, I get nutrients. That's great.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I think it works either way. If you look at it from a they got in a relationship for in whatever reason, now they're both like, yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
And they're both for it. Then that seems more like the other is the extension of the one. Whereas I gave the example of like gut biome. Like, we have a bunch of things inside of us. Are they doing their work because they're like, yeah, I want this body to be healthy, or are they just like, yeah, feed me, I'm living, that's all I really care about.
Yeah.
So who knows? It's you can't add those emotional sort of like ideologies onto it.
Sure.
And provide that better than worse than morality kind of, you know, question.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's kind of a bit of an aside, but mainly we're just talking about you have this mutual symbiosis, and that is what the alder has with the Frankia, where the Frankia gets inside and literally infects the root hairs, but is pulled into the cortisol cells or cortex cells of the tree, but they're just in there, but they're not actually inside the cells. They're not actually physically inside the other thing other than within this capsule.
Yeah.
This node. So they're still two separate things. I think that is the best analogous for the gut biome we have in our stomachs, right?
Yeah.
They're independent things. They're doing their own thing. They could or could not live without us because this is their perfect home, but they are inside but not a part of.
Sure.
They're separate things. So what we're talking about today is when that line gets blurred a bit. And
the line of something being inside something else.
And being separate
things. And being separate.
When and how do they become the same thing?
Sure. Well, I've got a bit of an example before we move on.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
And tell me if I'm on the right track here. We've talked about chlorophyll.
Yes.
Chloroplast?
Well, chloroplast has chlorophyll in it. So okay. Chloroplast is what you're looking for.
We've talked about chloroplast and its origin story.
Uh-huh.
How it was an algae that lived on its own.
Yeah.
And then it moved into leaves.
Yes. Alex, that's exactly what we're talking about today.
Really?
Yes. So.
Wow, I nailed it.
You cannot get any more perfect of an example. That is, the term is endosymbiosis.
Endosymbiosis, meaning outside.
Inside.
Inside.
Yes.
Inside. What am I thinking of? Ecto.
Ecto or exo.
Okay, yeah. Exo.
We used to talk about arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi as ectomycorrhizal fungi, and there's also endomycorrhizal fungi. So we used to say endo and ecto, and now I believe it's endo and arbuscular.
Arbuscular, yeah. Is outside.
Correct. And they then send in these things that go, they make these big sheaths around. But I could be getting that wrong. It has never been clear to me if that change was ever made or if there's just like someone said, we're going to call these outer and these ones are inner. So it's not quite clear to me. I haven't done the research on that.
Okay.
Regardless, we have... in our story today, we've chosen this tree because the way back when, 230 million years ago, mm-hmm. this tree decided they didn't need to put their chlorophyll into leaves. They just kept it in these weird stem shoots and then just grew those out. And who knows how that developed, you know, way, 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 way back when.
Yeah.
But they ended up basically taking a different strategy, and they said, we are going to keep these weird things, fill those with all of our chloroplasts, and then they are going to do our photosynthesizing.
Now, I have a question it's sort of a technical question about that.
Point of order.
Wait, yes. What do they say in like a British court? They don't say hoorah, hoorah.
No, I don't know what they say. Anyway. Usually they usually yell, sit down, sir. Something like that.
And with their wigs in 2022.
Oh, I love some of those things. It's incredible. When they're just like yelling. I think Robin Williams said that you have the House of Lords and the House of Commons, which is essentially the House of Lords with a two-drink minimum or something like that. it was really good because they just yell at each other and say wacky
That's
things.
So funny.
It was really good.
The two-drink minimum. Okay, so if this tree has leaves, but it doesn't use those leaves for chlorophyll,
yeah,
and it puts the chlorophyll in these stem shoots, mm-hmm. or these is stem extenders.
Yeah. Extendos. Yeah.
Why doesn't that make that a leaf?
Oh, what a good question.
When does a leaf
Alex?
Become a leaf?
There's another comedian who was I can't even remember the guy's name off the top of my head. But he was talking about some scientists who saw that the male horse fish. Fish horse? What am I thinking?
Seahorse.
Seahorse. Thank you. That the male held onto the babies.
Right.
And they were like, why don't you just call that one the female?
Yeah.
And he was like, shut up. They just stuck with it. Yes. Okay. This is a very good question.
Okay.
So in the very, very first plants, like the OG plant, the very, very first one.
Yeah.
They noticed it had very specific things. It had these organs that were leaves. It had organs that were stems, and mm-hmm. it had roots. And those are the only things that it had.
Okay.
So those are the three big things. And whenever you define a leaf, it always has a bud at the base of it.
Oh.
So whenever you are looking anywhere in the plant world, even in conifers, if you look really closely, there is an individual bud per each individual leaf, although it is like really reduced and like essentially evolved away.
Okay.
It's kind of like the tailbone in humans.
Yeah.
Where we used to have a connected tail, theoretically. Now we just see this very old remnant that doesn't really do anything.
Interesting.
So it's the same thing where you see this bud that's right there. So they say, well, these are certainly leaves. We know that because each leaf has a bud next to it, and that's what defines a leaf.
Wow. Okay. So these little extra shoots on the umbrella pine don't have little buds underneath them.
Yes.
But the ones on the stem do.
Yes.
The leaves on the stem do.
That would be the theory. So I'm not a like microbiologist or microbotanist in that what they would do is take like the tiniest little slivers of tissue and then cut them. So you have like these almost like nothing amount of tissue, and you'd look at those, it's completely see-through because you're almost cutting it at a cellular level.
Jeez.
And they would look at these with intense microscopes and they'd say, okay, I see this piece of anatomy, this piece of anatomy, and they kind of do just cuts on cuts on cuts and cuts, and they do like 100 within like a millimeter.
Mm.
And then you can see where this thing pops up. It's like getting an MRI, where you essentially have a view from your body going down.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird, but you can see like, okay, there's this part, then this part, then this part, then this part. Like you're looking at a series of pictures coming down your body.
You know, there's my eyeballs. Oh, they're gone.
Yeah, okay, then now okay, there's my neck. Okay, there's my chest. Okay, I see now the bones like appear and then go away.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a very similar okay. thing. So what they would do is they would look, and so I don't know why there is some people saying there is no bud here, so these are not leaves. If they're not leaves, they are stem tissue because that's the only kind of other kind of tissue that would look like this. And then they say, so this must be a not leaf, so therefore it's a cladode. If other people said, no, there it is. That is a bud at the base of this leaf, and this leaf now just grows this way, so it would have a dimorphic growth pattern. Some leaves grow like those little ones on the stem.
Yeah.
Some of them grow to be really long and photosynthetic. I don't know.
Wow.
I haven't read the studies and heard people make their distinctions one way or the other.
So can we extrapolate a little bit?
Yeah.
If you find that there is no bud,
uh-huh.
and those are not leaves on the stem,
yeah.
And if they're not leaves on the end of the stem,
uh-huh.
the green leaf-looking things aren't leaves.
Yeah,
would that mean this is not a tree? And not this? Does that mean that this has no leaves and is therefore not a tree?
No, it can still be a tree. It's clearly, obviously, a plant. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it just would have the photosyntheticness in a different part, in the stems. Let me give you another example. A cactus. A cactus, say a prickly pear or a saguaro, anything like that. All those big prickles, all those spines coming off,
yeah.
those are actually highly modified leaves. And all of the photosynthesis happens inside the stem tissue that we see as the body of the cactus.
Oh, wow.
So that is another example where there's no leaves like to speak of most of the time on most cactuses. Cacti, pardon me.
But aren't cacti not trees?
They're not trees, but they're plants. And so you would say, like, this is clearly a tree. It's got one single stem. It makes wood. It grows very high.
Yeah.
So it meets our definition of what a tree would be by almost any definition you can imagine. However, if it doesn't have leaves, but it's still photosynthesizing, then the photosynthesis, those little chloroplasts would be in some other place.
Yeah.
In this case, it would be modified stem tissue or modified shoots.
The cladodes.
Exactly. So it would still meet that, but you can also have like parasitic plants that don't have any chlorophyll at all, potentially not even leaves, because who cares if they don't need them. The mistletoe or the Indian pipe is a similar thing like that, where they just grow off the nutrients from whatever they're plugged into, and some of them have zero chlorophyll, some of them have zero ability to live outside of their parasitic partner.
Wow.
So this is not the case for this tree.
Yeah.
But if you don't need them, or you've chosen a different path, then that's just that you're just as good.
Okay.
So it all has chlorophyll. This tree does, and it has them inside these chloroplasts. And just as you brought up earlier, the chloroplasts did not used to be and have different DNA from the actual plant it is inside.
Right.
Every time I say that, it blows my mind.
I know. That's so cool.
The other example is mitochondria. And I think we talked about this way back when on our What is a Leaf episode.
Mm.
And
on
that,
our Patreon.
On our Patreon.
Yeah.
That's the place to go listen to all these things.
Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. Oh, that's A-R-B-O-R-T-R-A-R-Y pod.
That was very loud.
Sorry.
Exactly. So what we're talking about today and what we're kind of where we're going from our symbiosis last week, we're talking about this Francia. Francia got in this relationship, infected the alder tree. The alder tree compartmentalized around it, but didn't kill it, and now they're working together.
Yeah.
But they're still separate things, right? Mm-hmm. You have this Francia inside this node of a different species entirely. The next level down, which is where we're wanting to go today, is to say, well, what happens when that barrier is broken? And when or has it ever happened that this symbiotic relationship of, let's say, the Francia inside of the tree but not a part of the tree, what happens when the Francia becomes a part of the tree?
Mm-hmm.
And now neither of them are separate entities, yet technically the Francia has its own DNA inside of the tree that has its own DNA.
What happens when the person camping outside your home moves in?
Yes. Oh my God, that's exactly it. But you're okay with that because they were camping outside your home. Like you gave them a shelter with your own home. Like mm-hmm. they were outside, but they were kind of covered, by your
canopy.
Yeah, you got your little, you extend your roof out a little bit. They're underneath that. But they all the time, give you free pizza. And you're like, okay, sounds good. I'll take the free pizza. You can live underneath the canopy. But at one point, they start making pizza inside your kitchen.
Great.
And you're like, hell yeah, I don't need to eat anything else anymore. I have pizza inside my kitchen forever.
That's very good, Casey.
And you're good to go. That's exactly what happened 1.6 billion years ago.
Wow.
So one point, we'll go even further back.
Okay.
Life existed about 4 billion years ago.
This is going to be a long episode.
Yeah, we're going to go year by year. 1 billion and 1. we're going to fast forward actually pretty decent ways. So 4 billion years ago, life existed. They were single-celled organisms. They were mainly one kind, pretty much only just one kind. There was one kind.
Okay.
They were called prokaryote cells.
Hmm.
A prokaryote is essentially the same kind of thing as a bacteria.
Okay.
Where it's a single cell, it has a membrane around it, but everything that's going on inside, like its DNA, is just kind of floating around there.
Hmm.
Like there's no, there's, it's all like, hey, just toss everything in this bag and go live. And it worked. It worked great for about 2.4 billion years.
Wow.
Everything went great, but then at one point, let's say you have that amount of time, you're going to have some relationships develop. And at one point, no one knows exactly when, no one knows exactly how, we just know it certainly had to have happened, probably happened, there became a second kind of cell called a eukaryote cell.
Hmm.
And that cell no longer has things just randomly floating around. They have things that are immediately put together in a little bag. So instead of having a giant sack filled with random stuff, and you're like, okay, how do I get this? Okay, got to dig around. Everything's kind of working. It's doing fine, but it's very chaotic. What if instead you had a bag full of these things inside that other bag, then a bag full of these things that are doing this one job? So you said, okay, where's my nucleus? Oh, there it is. It's in this nucleus bag.
Yeah.
Where is my reticulum? Oh, what is it? There's a certain term I'm looking for. I can't remember my cell biology, Alex. I looked this up earlier. I'm going to look it up right now.
The powerhouse of the cell. That's all I remember.
Yeah, that's mitochondria.
Yeah. I remember there's a nucleus.
Yes.
And I remember there is a little squiggly green thing.
Yep, that's the one. the nucleus, the Golgi apparatus.
Oh, oh my God.
Endoplasmic reticulum. Oh, yep, there it is. That's in that bag.
Wow.
The lysosomes, there they are over there. Got those taken care of.
I haven't heard these words for 20 years.
Yeah, no one has. Even if you study biology, you probably also haven't heard them for 20 years.
Wow.
So this is the eukaryote cell.
Okay.
Now, the big thing that happened is that the eukaryote cells became essentially this newfangled idea that became extremely successful. Mm. And that cell, the eukaryote, is what's in you, me, and everything that you see.
Okay.
Except for the things that you don't see, a lot of those are still those prokaryote cells. Bacteria is a perfect example.
So my body's cells are eukaryote?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. They are individually bound with other individually bound things inside.
They're not a type of cell, right? They're just like a strategy of cell?
No, they would be a type of cell.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We have the eukaryotes and the prokaryotes.
But like my skin cells
yeah.
are eukaryote skin cells.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
And then there'd be a eukaryote heart cell in an elephant. And this tree is made up of different kinds of cells, all of which are the basic eukaryote.
Okay.
So the big thing that changed, Alex, that you already brought up, is at one point the mitochondria, the engine of the cell, mm-hmm. ended up moving into that plant or into that other cell. But it probably started out as some other cell.
Oh, wow.
So there's three prokaryote cells floating around in some, you know, plasmic soup. And then at one point, no one really knows how. It could have happened by a couple different methods, but no one's really 100% sure. It would be that you had one cell, might have been, let's say, parasitic on another cell. It just latched on and for whatever reason just kind of lived on it. Then that big cell that was being parasitized, for whatever reason, enveloped the other cell.
I see.
Either it was going to destroy it and kill it, or it decided, okay, I actually can just keep this right here. And for whatever reason, it didn't die. It wasn't killed. It kept doing whatever it was doing, but it would send out something else that then the cell it was now inside really, really liked.
Okay.
So that then happened.
Pizza.
Exactly. Exactly.
To this continue the metaphor.
This is the pizza. So you have a cell that's just like, oh, I'm just going to live on the side of you and make my pizzas. Yeah. And the cell's like, I hate you. I'm going to destroy you. Envelops it in this membrane inside of its cell so it can then crush it and destroy it and digest it. And then it realizes, hold on.
This stuff is pretty good.
This is some good pizza. You just keep on making that pizza and I think we're going to have a fine time. That happened twice with the mitochondria and with chloroplast, which you said an algae. It was probably more of a cyanobacteria. So it's just one individual cell that can do photosynthesis.
Oh, okay.
So then that cell did the same thing. Somehow it got inside and created this symbiotic relationship with another single prokaryote cell.
Okay.
But as soon as they move inside, boom, they became eukaryotes.
Oh, because, okay.
So that is the theory.
It becomes a eukaryote because it has another prokaryote inside of it, so it has like a bag within a bag.
That's
now.
Kind of the idea.
Okay.
But the evolution of how that happened is a huge mystery. No one knows.
Oh, sure.
Because what about all these other things? What about all the endoplasmic reticulum? How did that? Was that another thing that did a certain thing that was another cell that then got enveloped also?
Right. Could that have started as a eukaryote that got taken in by another eukaryote, and
exactly.
suddenly it's still a eukaryote, but it's a more complex one.
Precisely.
Okay.
Or it's just doing something else that was really good for this cell.
Yeah.
So no one really knows all that, but the one thing that we can for sure say, and most likely I should add, it wasn't because the endoplasmic reticulum doesn't have its own DNA. The mitochondria has its own DNA. The chloroplasts have their own DNA,
okay,
which is different from that plant cell that they are inside.
Is DNA a cell?
No, DNA is a big, long, complex chain of molecules, essentially.
Okay, and molecules are smaller than cells.
Yes, molecules are. You have an atom.
Yeah.
Of any what are those things? Elements.
Uh huh.
When you put those atoms together,
yeah.
different elements together, they become molecules.
Okay,
and when you add more and more different molecules onto things, they become more complicated, like enzymes and proteins and things like that.
Yeah.
Lipids.
Carbohydrates.
Yeah, exactly. So those are all molecules, but we have names for those molecules, both specific and generic names.
But molecules, I'm so sorry for this.
What are you talking about?
Molecules are not, obviously not living. So the difference between molecules and cells that are that is that cells have DNA and are living?
Yeah, I think it's made up of these different molecules and membranes and things.
Oh, cells are made of molecules.
Yes, everything's made of that.
Sure.
It's, that's the tiniest like,
I guess I knew
building
that.
Block you didn't know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I swear I'm not this. I haven't taken a science class in so fucking long.
Yeah, you got to dust off those books and then like rebuild that structure that you were walking on. I'm like, okay, now I can see the whole picture again.
I'm rebuilding the calluses on my fingers.
From writing with those number two pencils.
Yeah.
Which, for those of you who just heard us say that, Alex consistently writes with both hands. That's why his callus is with both hands. Anyway, just letting you know.
I was going for a guitar metaphor, but I also like the writing with two hands.
Dimitri Martin does that. Our third comedian of the night. Anywho. So where were we? Oh, we were talking about a tree, Alex.
Oh, yeah.
So the reason I thought this would be really interesting is that last week you say, well, this is what it's like when you see a really complex symbiosis. Now, if we go way back in time, we see where endosymbiosis has actually happened way before, where these kinds of symbiotic relationships have happened but have been pushed and progressed to the point where now those three independent organisms are now one organism. Yeah. One plant cell is made up of conceivably three entirely separate DNAs.
Yeah.
Which is really fascinating to think about. And in humans, we have mitochondria too. And you've probably heard the term mitochondrial DNA. Mm-hmm. It's like the CSI evidence, you know?
Yeah.
Where they actually take the DNA from your mitochondria to figure out who you are or what your parents were, because that is passed down through your mother, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can trace all of your lineage through your mitochondrial DNA.
Holy shit. And every lineage's mitochondrial DNA is different?
Yeah, just slightly different.
Wow.
So, and that's the thing, is that in order for the chloroplast to be passed down to the next cell, they have to provide a copy of the DNA of the chloroplast to the next cell so that will then do it. If you take that cell out, I'm sorry, if you take the chloroplast out of the cell cannot make a new chloroplast. The chloroplast makes copies of itself.
Okay.
Just like any other cell makes copies of itself.
Yeah.
So that is a process that has been passed down for the last 1.6 billion years. Where each individual chloroplast cell, or whatever, you know, however long ago that really, you know, happened, that same chloroplast changed or passed down its DNA to the next cell, 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 times every moment for every single day for 1.6 billion years. We're now going to introduce our new segment. Alex and Casey, you have to take a second.
Let's set a timer for 20 seconds.
Okay, and let's just breathe for a moment.
And we're just gonna take in. I encourage anybody listening who's feeling like us to take this 20 seconds. We begin now. All right, our time is up.
Holy shit! That's insane!
Do you need 20 more seconds?
I need 20 more seconds. Oh, God. So this is what blows my mind. This is like such a complex thing, and this is how you prove that these are three individual, different living organisms that have lost everything. Imagine you and I get together. We've lived for 1 billion years, but we slowly change over time.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, Alex, you are so much better at playing guitar. I just completely lose my fingers. I lose my arms. I don't need to play guitar. I've got you to play guitar for me.
Sure.
I am so good at walking. You're like, I don't even need, as long as I can just like get on your back, Casey's going to do all the walking. You lose your feet, your legs, your knees, your everything.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we keep going. Well, I'm sorry. I shouldn't even say all of a sudden. Then over time, slowly, you lose everything except your arms and your brain to play your arms. In fact, you lose everything in your brain to do everything else, only play guitar.
Sure.
I lose everything else except my walking and the brain parts that say, here's how you walk.
Right.
This is what happened to these other cells. They lost everything else. It's all evolved away except for I make energy from the sun and I turn it into ATP and then sugars.
It's pretty cool.
That's all it does. Everything else that used to make that cell function no longer does. So it is 100% a part of the cell that it's inside, but separate.
We've used the analogy before, and I'll refine this analogy too, as if we need one more analogy. People understand it by now.
They get it. It's
like when a company hires out, it contracts another company to do something.
Yeah.
That other company does a lot of other stuff for other clients, but for this client, they just make this thing, right? A widget. Isn't that what the school people talk about?
I don't know.
So eventually they give so much business to this company to make this one little thing that they go, you know what? We want to buy your company and move into our building.
Yes.
And continue to just make this thing for us.
Exactly.
That whole team moves into that building.
Yep.
And now they're not working for any other client doing any other thing. They are just making widgets for this company.
Exactly.
They are now a part of the company. They're on the payroll making widgets.
100%. That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that happened. And that, for me, Alex, makes it like more clear when we talk about what is a leaf and why. What is this cladode thing? How does this work? And what did this tree do? So 230 million years ago, that tree, instead of saying, I'm going to always put in the leaves, it said, oh, I'm going to do this over here. And it just kind of points to, in my opinion, the fact that there is a way to do it, but there's also like the, I guess, it's hard for me to like put in words right now. I'm still thinking about like the evolutionary time where things can change and be done a different way, I guess.
Yeah. So if you want another 20 seconds, we can give you.
Thank you, Alex. So I wanted to talk about endosymbiosis and how the leaf and the old cell types have kind of come together and done something completely different. And the fact that this tree and a bunch of other plants are like, hey, I don't need to do it the same way. I'm going to do it completely different and show how fluid this cell thing is, where it's not that everything has to be passed down perfectly the same way, where some little agreement is made and things are done this way or they're done that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mind-blowing to me how evolution works, where you can have these 1.6 billion years ago, these two single cells become a now double cell and change the world for the foreseeable future. Meanwhile, you have one tree that 230 million years ago said, leaves are stupid. I'm not going to use them. I'm just going to put them in these twigs over here, and that's where I'm going to do my photosynthesis.
Right.
Unfortunately, they didn't change the world, the poor things. they used to be all over the northern hemisphere, and now they've just completely disappeared except for this beautiful little, used to be even more forest in Japan.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a little bit of a sad story there. But I don't know. I just think this is a perfect tree to kind of, it shirks the way that things work.
Yeah.
And they do it differently. And then you get the idea of these cells doing things differently, where they make this connection and just say, hey, we're going to go left while everyone else is going right.
Yeah.
And it's just a wacky tree doing wacky stuff in a wacky way. And I like that.
It's fascinating stuff, Casey. And I think I've reached, you know, usually we'll talk about trees or some kind of cultural thing,
maybe a
drop of religion here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Then every once in a while we get sort of deep in the weeds in biology.
Yeah.
While you're up to your ankles in weeds, I am like there. The weeds have gone inside my esophagus. Have created a symbiotic relationship with me.
Yeah. You're becoming like a Jumanji character.
Yes.
Yeah.
They take me over completely and I reach my limit pretty quickly.
Yeah.
As far as like learning about biology things.
Sure, sure.
Like today I learned about molecules for the first time.
Yeah. Now I'm sorry. Describe to me this molecule one more time. This is a fascinating concept.
So I think it would be a good time for us to move into our review.
I think that's a great idea.
Of the, what I'm calling the Japanese umbrella pine.
That is right.
Here's how it works. We're going to give a few final parting words to this great ancestor of an ancient time.
Yeah.
And then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. You know what might be fun, Casey?
Ooh, what?
Is giving it 0 to 10 golden Claydodes of Connor. Oh, of honor.
I like of Connor. Connor's Claydodes.
I got too good of sleep last night. My brain's not working today.
Yes, yeah, best problem to have.
As our resident microbiologist, we'll begin with you.
All right, that sounds great. So I'm a big fan of conifers, of course. This yeah. is no superlative conifer. It doesn't get the biggest, the tallest, anything like that. But I have a special place in my heart for these ancient Japanese conifers.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, Japan and the Pacific coast of the United States share a conifer diversity that is just outstanding.
Really?
Yeah. So like there's a lot of species that only grow right here on the west coast of the United States. Hmm. The sequoias and the coast redwoods, perfect example. A bunch of other species I could give an example of, but also like we have a huge diversity of them. So like we have more fir trees growing in one spot than I think see. Anywhere else on the planet.
Cool.
But Japan also has this mind-blowing diversity of like trees that don't exist anywhere else, like endemic trees. But not only endemic, where it's like, oh, this is the only species of spruce tree that grow. It only grows on this island. This species only grows on this island. Whereas Japan has like, this is the only, and I should expand this out to like China as well. China does this also, where this is the only place that this tree exists, and there's nothing even else close to it in the entire world that is remotely close to it in terms of lineage.
Mm.
And that makes this tree really cool, where it's on the level of ginkgo, on the yeah. level of Don Redwood,
yeah.
where there's nothing that's even close to it, and it crushes it every single time. I think it's beautiful. I love the cones. I love the conifer-ness of it, because you know what? You look at it, and you're like, yeah, it's a pine tree. Wait a second.
Right.
That's not a pine tree. That's a podocarp. Wait, that's not a podocarp? Who are you? It makes my day. So I think I'm going to give the umbrella pine. I'm going to go like 8.8.
8.8?
Yeah, I just think they're such beautiful trees.
That's a great score, Casey.
Yeah, and I love finding new trees. And I've known about this one for a long time, but you can't like just go outside and be like, yeah, there's one right over there. Probably like you can with almost any other tree we've covered.
Yeah.
Well, it can probably like 75%.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go out and find one of these trees, you need to search for it.
Right.
And when you find it,
you're
going backpacking in the mountains of Japan, or you're going to go just find your way through Hoyt Arboretum and stumble upon it and be like, whoa.
Is there one at Hoyt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think there's probably one or two.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd like to go see it.
Hey, okay. I can take you right there.
Let's go 8.8.
8.8. That's what I say.
8.8 golden Claydodes of honor.
That's right.
From microbiologist Casey Clapp.
Now, astute student of microbiology.
Yes.
Alex Croson, if you had an opinion on this tree, what would it be?
I love it. I love an ancient tree. I love a living fossil.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan. Is this considered a living fossil?
Absolutely.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I like a tree that makes the bristlecone pine look like a young whippersnapper. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I know it's not the same thing.
Hey,
we're talking evolutionary age, not whatever age,
whatever else,
chronological age.
Yeah, well, we know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Us here, our crew, we get you.
Yeah, a crew of two. That's all you need. Yeah, I'm feeling. I love the way it sort of like took a different approach to leaves and to its chlorophyll.
Yep.
And it's chloroplast.
Yeah,
I still don't know the difference, but I will someday. I'm feeling a very well. You know how sometimes we give a score that's really like solid?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a rock solid 7.0 for me.
Mm, okay. That's
You're disappointed.
I'm not disappointed. I think if we went to Japan and we saw these.
Oh, that's true of every tree we talk about.
It would blow our minds. Yeah, that's very fair.
Yeah. But yeah. 7.0 is where I'm landing, and it's
I would take it.
True golden Claydodes.
100% underplanted tree. Go out, buy one, plant them.
There you go.
Enjoy it.
Hey, how often do you get one of those?
Very rarely, in fact. Very rarely. But they're not like I think they're vulnerable because they've been cut down a lot in past times.
Oh, geez.
But they're in the nursery trade. They're all over the place. Like you can definitely buy one and plant it. And I think it grows pretty well. Like. Kind of everywhere. You can plant them over here on the Pacific coast. There's a guy who made a forest of them in New Jersey. So
wow.
Yeah, there's options out there.
Awesome. Well, that was our review of the Japanese Umbrella Pine, it's time for the Completely Arbitrary Q&A. This week's question is from the Patreon.
Oh, Patreon.com.
Jenny asks, I was just wondering, do either of you have a favorite fact that you've discovered as a result of doing research for the podcast? Any standout wow moments?
Ooh, now that is a really, really hard one, Alex.
Yeah, I have a. While you're doing that,
yeah. What do you have? You have an answer already?
I have a bit of an answer. Okay. I have sort of a broad answer. But doing the Croson's homegrown trivia has been really fun for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And anytime I find out that you can like make a tea out of something and it helps, you know, rheumatism or something.
Yeah,
I love any sort of like medicinal. Qualities. I love discovering about medicinal qualities or like, hey, you can eat this part of the tree.
Yeah, gotcha.
That stuff is always really interesting to me. Nothing that's like, well, I'm sure there has been stuff that's completely blown me away. Like the what we talked about today, the chloroplast moving into the leaves and it having originally been a different cell.
Yeah.
Or different organism.
That is really, I think that also speaks to where my first brain went. It's like, I can't like put one specific thing, but there's like a bunch of like different things that really jump out at me.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, that was a really interesting fact. That's mind blowing. But then whenever you hear these other things, you're like, oh, I love that. I want more of that. I want more of that. I want more of that.
Yeah. It's like types of discoveries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My answer is, learning that you can use, different parts of the trees for different either medicinal purposes or culinary purposes.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good answer, I think.
Yeah. What do you think? What's a topic your discoveries?
I think for me, and this came from doing research for the what tree? Oh my God. Why am I doing this? There it is right there. The Italian cypress.
Oh.
As well as the catalpa. Mm-hmm. Two trees I've known and loved for years and years. But I reached out because I wanted to do something on taxonomy. So then I looked up and I found the book that is our main resource for those two things, and that is the Naming Nature by Carol Kasich Yoon. And I think that's one of the most fascinating books that I've read in a long time. The big thing that came to me is the I think my favorite fact. Again, I could think of many. For example, runner-up, learning that the black walnut does not actually destroy, does cause the allelopathy.
Yes.
Love that, because I think we were the first people to actually say that out loud, other than, what's her name, who wrote the article?
Sure.
So credit for the first person to write it, but I think everyone in the world heard that for the first time like we did.
Yeah, discovering things that we thought were certain
are not
certain
exactly.
Or completely opposite.
So good.
Is always a treat.
Yeah. So in this case, I think that's actually goes in with Naming Nature, where I thought that I never gave two thoughts about how we name nature. I thought we just kind of do it. I didn't think about it. And when I read that book, it was like this umwelt idea. I was like, whoa, what exactly does that mean? And it was introduced early in the book, and then she kept on moving through it and really expanded this idea and painted the picture of it. And I think to this day, that's probably one of my favorite, I'm going to say facts or concepts that have come up, where it's like we as humans, how we see and perceive things, and then giving that over to everything else in the world and how they perceive and see things. And that, I think, is something that it's probably my favorite. I'm going to say fact just to go with the question, because I love that. It feels like it puts me in my place to some extent, but it also opens my mind up to say, oh, this isn't the only way to do things.
Yeah.
There is a million different ways. It just happens that this is a way that we are doing it now.
There you have it.
Love that.
Thank you so much for your question, Jenny. If you have a question for us about trees, email us or any other topic.
Yeah.
You know.
If you want to just talk.
Bowling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's ARBORTRARY pod. Follow us on Instagram @arbitrarypod or support this podcast, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join the Arboretum for $5 a month and get 2 bonus episodes, 1 fortnightly.
Yes, indeed.
Or the Cone of the Month Club and get a unique die-cut cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist and printed here locally in Portland, Oregon, sent to you in your mailbox every month.
It's a lot of fun.
This month, the Bunya.
I love it. The Bunya. Bunya. It's a perfect tree.
Casey.
Alex. We've done it again.
We've done it again.
How could we have known?
What have you done? Who says that?
A podcast.
It's from something.
Ooh, I have no idea. I think it's from a lot of things.
It sounded like Billy Crystal or something.
Done. Usually I think that's like someone makes a... Paris steals Helen of Troy, you know?
Oh.
What have you done? You've caused war between the Achaeans and the Trojans. What are they?
Is this covered in your History of Rome podcast?
No, that's Greek history.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a different time period.
Whoops. Oh, boy. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. Hey, we got more symbiosis talk next week.
That's right.
Tune in for the exciting conclusion. We'll see you next time.
Au revoir.
Bye-bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.